I would like to mention chroma, lights designed for humans. Chroma, a Seattle-based innovator founded by ex-NASA and Air Force engineer Michael Shapiro, is on a mission to enhance physical and mental health with purpose-built devices, unlocking peak human health, cognitive function, and performance. Shapiro launched Chroma to restore the natural light lost to screens in indoor living and delivers faster recovery, sharper minds, and better sleep. Their products hit hard. The Iron Forge speeds muscle repair with red and near-infrared light, while the Skylight mimics sunlight to boost sleep and energy. A standout, the Forge Lamp, is a portable gem that fires 660 nanometer and 850 nanometer light to energize mitochondria and heal tissues on the go. Remember the four red light chromophores on cytochrome C oxidase, frequently talked about in the podcast. This is why. Their products are built with military grade durability that have lasting impact. Chroma's tech fuses precision and power. Gallium titride power supplies, smaller, cooler, and stronger than silicone, provide flicker-free light that's easy on the eyes. High-powered LEDs target key wavelengths for skin, tissue, and cellular health with smart heat management for the lasting impact. Every design decision Chroma makes serves a purpose: to create devices that are precise, durable, and effective for improving human life. Remember, humans use different wavelengths of light for different functions of life. Remember when I ask, what do you think light is? Chroma designs with our biology in mind, from sleep aids and wound healing to mitochondrial energy, full body lights and blue light blocking glasses. They are US made and Chroma ships globally and accepts FSA and HSA payments. Use autism at checkout for a 10% off discount. That's autism at checkout for a 10% off discount. For today's episode, we are going to build a map, a sensory map, and we are going to use a popular molecule in the podcast called serotonin. Remember, this is synthesized from tryptophan, that aromatic amino acid. Autistic or not, we all have this sensory map. Serotonin, remember, a neurotransmitter and a neuromodulator, plays a fascinating role whereby it shapes how our brain constructs the sensory map. The way it organizes and interprets sensory input from the world. Remember, sensations are extracting information from the outside world, making sense of the environment. You might know of serotonin as associated with mood regulation, and that's true. It also influences development. We've talked a lot about the maternal serotonin and the maternal tryptophan during development. This key neuromodulator, this little molecule here, fine-tunes the sensory system that we use to navigate the world, particularly early in brain development. In the brain, sensory maps are like blueprints. They're instructions. Remember the episodes on sensory processing? Serotonin here helps lay out touch receptors. We've covered the touch receptors, some of those hypo and hyper sensitivities with the touch receptors. running up through the spine and brainstem. We're going to talk about more of the brainstem as well. And also, the visual field, how we interpret the world visually. Remember, the eyes are in large part how humans navigate the world. Serotonin acts as this neuromodulator during this developmental window and helps refine these maps by influencing neuronal growth, synaptic connections, and plasticity. We've talked about each one of those three, and in large part, that explains autism single-handedly. When serotonin is high or low, either way, the sensory map can be disrupted. It's not as accurate. Now, just imagine that. You're navigating the world, and your map is wrong. How is that going to make you feel while you're trying to reach your destination? With vision, serotonin helps regulate the pruning of connections. In the thalamus, we've talked about the thalamus, and in the cortex, and this ensures that inputs from the eyes traveling downstream are properly wired, properly connected to help create this visual map. The serotonin molecule fine-tunes how sensory neurons compete for space inside the brain's map. Remember, we have three main types of neurons: sensory neurons, motor neurons, and interneurons. And remember our conversations about sensory integration. This is in large part what we're doing, because rarely, if ever, that sensory processing is singular, meaning it's just vision without auditory or without touch, or it's just auditory without vision or without touch. So rarely, if ever, that sensory processing is singular. We are always integrating sensations. Remember the role of the mesencephalon. This is a large part what it's trying to accomplish. In conditions like autism, and even schizophrenia, these things are abnormal. One thing to highlight is, this is huge in development. However, this remains through adulthood. So some mechanisms behind the serotonin making the sensory map. Serotonin has several receptor types, over 14 identified subtypes. We won't go into many details here. For instance, if you remember the dopamine is easy. There are two dopamine types: excitatory, which are DR1 and 5, and inhibitory, DR2, 3, and 4. However, with serotonin has 7 types. And this is pretty complicated. This is not really critical information for us. However, they still share the excitatory and inhibitory. Something interesting here is the critical period. Remember, we learned so much during this critical period at an early age. Sensory neurons form excessive connections here, and this allows for that accelerated learning, if you will. Serotonin helps prune these back through activity-dependent processes. It modulates the release of brain-derived neurotrophic factor, BDNF, which is a molecule. And we've discussed this in episodes 3, 4, and 5. We discussed it in a couple of those, or all three of those episodes. This is a molecule that strengthens active synapses. And this tells the nervous system, these things are important. We're going to keep these. And the ones not stamped by the BDNF are lost. They're just washed away, not needed. Another thing about the serotonin is axonal guidance. And serotonin influences how each axon grows and navigates to their targets. Remember, this is huge in connections. Partly by altering cytoskeletal dynamics. So here we go. Microtubules. very fascinating, especially in quantum biology, quantum physics. Remember these microtubules. Serotonin will then affect neurogenesis and migration. This is huge in autism, and it determines how many neurons are born and where they will go, where they will migrate and settle in sensory regions. Remember what the microtubules are doing. Performs a frame for the cell and tracks for the cell so that they can travel. In addition to the BDNF, glutamate, the excitatory neuron, and GABA, the inhibitory neuron, are also playing critical roles here in helping serotonin outline what is important and what is not needed. Some brain regions involved here. Somatosensory cortex. This is at the top, in the middle, part of the brain. Remember, we've talked about the frontal eye fields, the somatosensory area, and the parietal lobe. From the front to back, at the top of the head, if you'd split them in thirds, equal thirds, the frontal eye fields is about the first third. And then the somatosensory is about the middle. And then the parietal lobe. Somatosensory here receives inputs, afferents, from the brainstem. Those key areas that we've discussed, especially the mesencephalon. Remember the mesencephalon's role of motor control and sensory integration and biasing the attention of the living organism to the outside world. This is all very important, all very underestimated and overlooked, quite frankly. The somatosensory will also receive inputs from the thalamus, that sensory relay station. Very, very important here. In addition, something we've talked about quite frequently is the basal ganglia. Remember the basal ganglia episodes, 3 or 4 episodes. The somatosensory will send signals to the input areas of the basal ganglia called the dorsal striatum. But specifically, the somatosensory will connect to the dorsal lateral region, which is heavily involved in habit formation. Remember, restricted repetitive behaviors and habit formation. The autistic phenotype very much loves their routine and habits and obsessions. This connection ought to be very concerning. And a region of interest. So the visual cortex as well. Serotonin shapes those ocular dominance columns, which organizes inputs from each eye. Remember, we've talked about the lateral geniculate nucleus, especially in the roles of the oxytocin and vasopressin in the autistic phenotype episode. An early stop for the visual inputs is the lateral geniculate nucleus. These have spatial relationships with the superior colliculus. Remember, the superior colliculus of the midbrain, the mesencephalon, they're all very tight here. They can just reach out and give each other high fives, essentially. The thalamus, the lateral geniculate nucleus, the superior colliculus. These are very important for vision and very early in the processing stage. They're very upstream in visual processing. And the auditory cortex. Serotonin helps define tonotopic maps, which are frequencies of organization. And it modulates the thalamocortical connections. So you hear a noise, and then you're trying to make sense of the noise, determine what it is, what it means. Serotonin here is helping that, helping those connections. And of course, the thalamus, heavily involved here with sensations. But if we're talking about brain serotonin, central nervous serotonin, the hotspot where these are released, part of the brainstem called the raphe nucleus, specifically the dorsal raphe. This brainstem structure is where serotonin lives, and it projects widely to sensory corticals and subcortical areas. So anytime we're talking about brain serotonin, it's the raphe. An interesting consideration here is the impact of stress levels, because Probably. People are familiar with the APA axis that releases cortisol. Remember, hypothalamic, pituitary, adrenal axis. So the adrenal glands are the final destination here. And then cortisol is released. Releasing cortisol will then downregulate the serotonin, though. And this is huge. This impacts the development of serotonin, creating these sensory maps. Now, if you know anything about the HPA axis, it doesn't take much for this to come into play here. It is healthy and a requirement, even, that we have a proper cortisol release that peaks in the morning. Cortisol is what will wake you up in the morning, not anything else. It's a spike in cortisol is what wakes you up. Now, if you think about the mismatched circadian rhythms, even, and how much that must be in play here, very underrated, very overlooked in all of research. Having these mismatched cortisol releases and mismatched circadian biology, circadian rhythms, that alone is probably enough to impact the sensory map. I would like to take a moment and mention a pressing issue we are seeing in our modern world. And that is tech use and tech light. The data are impressive and concerning on isolated wavelengths of light, especially shorter wavelengths, which is blue light. For those that don't know, we have chromophores, which are special proteins that absorbs specific wavelengths of light. For blue light, the light that is LED light and tech light, that protein is called melanopsin. Melanopsin is responsible for our circadian biology, physiology and cell functioning, hormone regulation, and even a connection to an area huge for mood. A consideration we should include is this protein was not even discovered until 1998. It seems important for us to understand how our biology uses the different wavelengths of light for various aspects of our biology. This blue light chromophore is our master controller, our master clock. Remember, circadian rhythm is a two-part process, two independent parts, light and dark. For a quick reference, see the 2017 Nobel Prize in Physiology and Medicine. But for now, I have something exciting. I want to introduce a product unlike any other product available. A highlight is the product from Daylight Computer Company created their product based on these factors. The Daylight Computer is completely blue light free. It has no flicker. Short wavelength flicker is extremely harmful for our eyes and downstream biology. Light flicker is constantly turning our central nervous system on and off. Essentially, it is like going to a light switch and repeatedly turning it on and off. The problem is, blue light and LED light does this, and it is so rapid, you cannot even perceive this in real time. The Daylight Computer is the lowest stimulation and foremost for sensory sensitive users. It is no question that the alternative product, especially when used at night, do not address or consider this in their product. It is so toxic to human biology. Big tech corporations have patents on how their short wavelength implicate the human nervous system. And a bonus, despite Daylight Computer not having backlight, it is very functional for outdoor use. And of course, increased sunlight is always preferred. I am happy to offer a discount for the Daylight computer. You can use the code AUTISM for a $25 off coupon. Again, use the code AUTISM and the discount code for $25 off. See the link in the show notes to Daylight Computer Company, or just give it a quick search in your internet browser. Use the code AUTISM for $25 off. So imagine the maternal. She's pregnant. She's already vulnerable to stress. Maybe she's working. Maybe she's working odd shift hours. Maybe her circadian rhythm isn't proper. That alone is a concern because of what we've covered with the maternal roles. And remember the short from Dr. Hannah Stevens. Maternal contribution is massive here, especially prenatally. Serotonin comes from the maternal, peripheral, and enteric nervous system, given to the placenta, through the placenta, and arrives in the uterus, the developing child in the uterus, supplying the fetal brain its serotonin. Because remember, the raphe part of this brainstem, this comes from the rhomb encephalon. And this doesn't come onto play right away. The raphe comes much later in the embryogenesis. Another underrated aspect is modern light, the LED and tech light, will release the cortisol via this HPA axis on its own and at odd times. Just being under this LED and tech light will release the cortisol. So just imagine how much time humans, especially mothers, are spending indoors under this modern lighting. Now, we will get into more detail about this momentarily, but this is, in my opinion, the cause of the rates of autism. We've talked a lot about proliferation, differentiation, and migration, even in this episode with the microtubules. Serotonin, the maternal serotonin, has a big influence on this regarding the sensory regions, specifically in the cortex and in the thalamus, which by now shouldn't be a surprise because of the roles here with the sensory map. Maternal physiology is huge here. The physical and mental state of the mother, the environment of the mother, is in large part a factor here. Not just the diet, not just necessarily the mental stress, or even physical health implications like inflammation and so forth. And this is on a feedback loop. The maternal and fetal are communicating with each other. The fetus can signal back to the mother. The fetal demand for the tryptophan might subtly shift maternal metabolism. Each one can influence one another. So let's talk about tryptophan hydroxylase 1. This is how serotonin is synthesized in the peripheral and enteric nervous system. TPH1 is not brain serotonin. Brain serotonin is TPH2. But in order to understand the maternal's role here, we need to further go into TPH1. We've talked about this in the autism and gastrointestinal problems episode. And this is even important in the neural tube. We've talked about that in the embryogenesis episodes. And even today with the proliferation, differentiation, and migration. But let's talk about tryptophan's role here, making the serotonin and tryptophan's influence by the aromatic amino acid properties. We've discussed that the light impact on the cortisol release is already a factor, maybe single-handedly, the factor. Remember, tryptophan is a building block protein. Along with methionine and tryptophan, they each have one codon. Essentially, all other proteins are developed through these amino acids. However, specifically, the aromatic amino acids and the methionine. Tryptophan peak absorption is right around 280 nanometer light, which is the strongest wavelength of light reaching terrestrial land. It starts the UVB wavelength. And then that enzyme comes into play, be it TPH1 or TPH2, tryptophan hydroxylase, and this is going to synthesize serotonin and melatonin. But in addition to that, there's this other pathway here, kynurenine, and this is not necessarily a good thing. Tryptophan can also be metabolized into this kynurenine, which is a downstream neuroactive compound. And this can influence inflammation and excitotoxicity, overly excitation. And this is often found in autism. This kynurenine pathway can produce acids, a quinolinic acid, and this is very toxic. This has implications on NMDA receptors, which are huge for learning and excitatory. Remember, it's an excitation receptor, NMDA and AMPA. And this acid has massive implications to neuronal life, cell life. Okay, just briefly on postnatal, because obviously with this mood regulation and allowing the serotonin to properly work, fall into place and build a sensory map postnatally. After birth, the maternal role is still in force with this comforting and touch and bonding and so forth. Remember, in the oxytocin episode, socialness is rewarding. Only happens when serotonin and oxytocin converge and the nucleus accumbens. And remember, we just briefly talked about the oxytocin here in this episode. So this comforting and these kind of stress buffering, which both serotonin and oxytocin have, is important. Now, the living arrangement, the environment of the mother postnatally even now, and going back to work, being forced back into work, has changed drastically, even over the last 20 to 50 years and the past 100 to 150 years. Now we have this movement almost in society about mothers and women being important in the professional roles and so forth. And that has overtaken, it has kind of made an imbalance of what is important here. The care of your newborn child through this critical development period, or getting back to work and showing your value in a professional role. We all make decisions. I just hope it's informed decisions. I hope you understand the impact here when this movement and how evolution says in many species, or in all species essentially, that the mother's role here for nurturing is vastly important. But we neglect that. We neglect it so bad. And there could be some societal issues here, some systematic issues here with the family or the mother needing the income right away. They're struggling to make the income. So they have to get back to work early. And then the child, the baby or infant, is off to a babysitter where they can just feed them, change them, comfort them when needed. It's all very fascinating and wrong. But it is so easy just to overlook that because everybody's focused on the wrong things, and maybe by design, maybe not. But if you think about the roles here postnatally of serotonin and oxytocin that share similar roles here with the maternal bonding, the parental bonding, remember the magnocellular type oxytocin. Remember that with the parental bonding. This is huge here. And oxytocin's other roles with the fear and anxiety buffering. It sends projections. Oxytocin is released in the hypothalamus, and one of the central nervous system receptors is in the brainstem area. And this is what it's doing. It's helping us modulate our attention and making sense of the world around us via these brainstem areas. That's important for the sensory integration and biasing the attention of the living organism to the environment. If the outside world is chaotic, we are not going to want to spend time there. Why would you? If you think something is chaotic, you're not going to want that. That's not a high desire. So these sensory maps are vital for understanding, knowing, and moving, learning, and connecting with the outside world. If you're listening to the podcast or listening to the episode, please feel free to leave a review or rating. In podcasting, reviews, ratings, and downloads are huge. And I very much appreciate your feedback. You can contact me on X at RPS47586, and we can have any discussion about autism. I very much appreciate your conversations about autism. You can check out the YouTube channel for full-length videos and shorts and clips. You can check out the Hop link for links to all of the shows across the different podcasting platforms. And contact me. Email info.fromthespectrum@gmail.com. Thank you for listening to From the Spectrum Podcast.